From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, I'm Paris Alston. Welcome to Consider This from Boston, where we have some of the best care for premature babies and their moms. And that's huge because across the nation, 1 in 10 babies are born prematurely. It's a common and costly issue. Health economists estimate the price tag is at least $25 billion each year. But as GBH Radio's Gabriella Emanuel has been finding out, the medical field knows very little about what causes preterm births or how to prevent them. She joins us now. Hey, Gabriella, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me on.
So give us the lay of the land. What exactly is a preterm birth?
Sure. So preterm birth is any kid who is born before 37 weeks, which is kind of like the finish line that designates a fetus as full term. Now, kids can be born a few weeks early or a few months early. So that is a big range in this kind of broad category of preterm birth. But as you just said, this is common. However, the burden of this condition is really not distributed evenly. It's 1 in 10 babies are born preterm in general, but that number is way higher if you're an African American baby. They have a 50% higher chance of being born early than their white counterparts, and that number is even higher if you're talking about extremely premature births. Then it's 2 to 3 times higher.
Oh, I see. And what are the consequences of preterm birth?
Sure. There are a few ways to think about this. First, being born preterm can lead to a whole slew of medical challenges that can last really decades. Here is Roberto Romero, who runs the National Institutes of Health's research branch on pregnancy.
There is no doubt premature birth is the most important problem facing obstetrics today. The consequences of premature birth can last a lifetime.
It's everything from cerebral palsy to autism to intellectual disabilities to hearing loss and blindness. And of course, all of this impacts the child and their family, but it also has an impact on the rest of society. In the medical bills, in the special education costs, in the lost wages due to disability. Since Medicaid covers close to half of all births in the U.S., the public really ends up paying for much of this. Now, again, as you mentioned, the catch of all of this is that doctors know very, very little about this condition and about how to prevent it. One expert, George Saudi, who is chief of obstetrics at the University of Texas Medical Branch, estimates that the field is actually a century behind the rest of medicine.
So people have been having babies since the beginning of time, and I imagine this issue has been around since the beginning of modern medicine. So, Gabriella, why don't we know more given how common and costly this is?
When I spoke to experts and basically asked that question, I got a couple of different answers. The first is that this is a really complex medical puzzle. Unlike most of medicine, you don't have one patient, you have two, the mother and the fetus. And the fetus is basically inaccessible. Sometimes these two patients actually have competing interests. And then on top of all that, you have this very short window with which to address the issue. Many diseases develop over months and years, if not even longer, decades. But this condition, everything is compressed into a few short weeks where you have to identify the problem and address it. And a second reason, there's not much research on pregnant people. For a long time, researchers have been afraid to actually study pregnant women. It was viewed as too risky, and federal regulations guiding medical research really didn't help.
Until 2018, pregnant people were categorized along with children, prisoners, individuals with intellectual disabilities as a vulnerable population for whom added protections are necessary.
That's Anne Drapkin-Lyerly, an obstetrician and bioethicist at the University of North Carolina. She points out that pregnant women are the only ones on that list who actually have full autonomy to give their own consent. Now, this regulation has changed, but she says it scared off researchers. It had this chilling effect. And the result of not doing studies is that medical care is then not guided by evidence. So tons and tons of drugs used in pregnancy have not been studied in pregnant people, which is kind of mind-blowing. And then there's a third reason, which is what knowledge we do have about this condition has not been turned into therapeutics. Drug companies really are not investing in this area. And experts say this is partly because of a fear of lawsuits. Nobody wants to harm an unborn child and then face the consequences. But the other part of it is the market size. It's really small. First of all, it's just women, so half the population. It's only if you're pregnant, so even smaller. You're not pregnant for that long. And then of all the pregnant people, only some of them need a medication. So compare that to like a cholesterol drug or something where men and women can take it every single day for the rest of their lives.
Whoa, this is all kind of shocking to find out, Gabriella. And what does it all mean for increasing the survival rates of preterm babies?
Well, actually, in that area, there has been enormous advances when it comes to saving kids who are born earlier and earlier. So if you go back to 1963, First Lady Jackie Kennedy had just given birth to a son who was 5.5 weeks early. It was actually here on Cape Cod. And the baby, Patrick, was airlifted to Boston. Doctors were desperately trying to save him, but after just 39 hours, he passed away. He was born 5.5 weeks early, remember. Today, you can save babies who are 15, 16, and even 17 weeks early. They're surviving and, in many cases, doing well. Although, again, we've talked about the kind of long-standing medical issues they can face. Now, many actually credit Patrick Kennedy's short life with all of these advances, since it kind of captivated the world, and then there was this infusion of resources and new research efforts afterwards. But as I was just saying, there is a cost. Some of this is because these babies stay months and months in the hospital in what's called the neonatal intensive care unit, or the NICU, which is remarkably effective, but also remarkably expensive. Medical bills for extremely premature infants are regularly hundreds of thousands of dollars and sometimes more than $1 million. And then there's that other piece that the kids can also end up paying a price. As we spoke about, they can have lifelong medical challenges. Here is the president of the March of Dimes, which is the leading nonprofit focused on maternal and infant health, Stacey Stewart.
If we're not going to invest on the front end, we have to expect that we're going to pay dearly on the back end. And that's what we're doing.
Investing on the front end means investing in preventing premature births and investing in research that would make that possible.
And what does that prevention look like?
Well, that's the challenge. We do know a bunch of risk factors. So things like exposure to wildfire smoke or even cigarette smoke or having twins or triplets or if the mom's really old or really young or has pre-existing health conditions like diabetes. All those things add up and can contribute to your risk of having a preterm birth. But when it comes to therapeutics, there are actually very few options available. There is an injection of progesterone, which is very controversial, and an FDA advisory committee has even recommended withdrawing it from the market. There is also a surgery that literally stitches shut the birth canal or the cervix, but there's not much else. Here is Romero again from the NIH.
The challenge of obstetrics is to look into early pregnancy, to identify the few patients who are going to develop complications and to intervene.
That is the puzzle that researchers need to figure out.
Well, we sure are glad to have you trying to put together some of these pieces. That's GBH reporter Gabriella Emanuel. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Before we go, I should tell you what else is up. You've probably heard about the school bus driver shortage happening nationwide and across the region. To try and address it locally, a new Boston Public Schools task force will examine student transportation problems and try to solve them this school year. Members of the task force will look into no-show school buses and the possibility of changing school start times. Meanwhile, statewide, the Massachusetts National Guard is expanding its mission to help get kids to school. Pam Riopold of the School Transportation Association of Massachusetts says there are a number of reasons for the shortage of drivers.
Often school bus drivers were older folks. They just don't need this right now, right? That with all the worry that comes along with the pandemic, you know, it was a time for a lot of them. You know, now's a good time to retire.
Guard members will now serve as bus drivers in Haverhill, Revere, Wachusett, and Worcester. The Guard is currently providing support to 13 school districts in total. And make sure y'all stay tuned to our podcast next week when we meet one of the families who relies on the Guard to get their kid to school. In other news, City and Boston Marathon officials are gearing up for the big race on Monday after a very long delay, more than 900 days since the last in-person race, in fact. Boston Athletic Association President Tom Grilk said that while the 26.2-mile course with a finish line on Boylston remains the same, just about everything else is different.
We've reduced our field size by something approaching 40% at this point. We've implemented a rolling start for the first time, which is to say people will get on the buses in Boston, go out to Hopkinton, get off, and just go. There'll be no large mass gatherings, and by doing it that way, it also increases greatly the spacing of runners on the street.
Grilk says the BAA has worked for months to plan out the safest possible experience for everyone at the marathon. The race is set to begin at 8:02 Monday morning, and just a note, this year there's no kissing allowed in the Wellesley Tunnel, for obvious reasons, right? But there'll be plenty of screaming. From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, the greatest combo since Marathon Monday and the traditions that come with it. I'm Paris Alston. Be well. Hey, you're a podcast listener, obviously. Would you like this show along with all of WBUR's best news stories of the day about Boston and the region all in a podcast feed? Well, I suggest you search WBUR News in your podcast app and hit subscribe. You'll be able to find just the local segment of Consider This, plus our best coverage in business, tech, politics, education, and arts, all in one place. Search WBUR News in your podcast app and hit subscribe.